Hi there and welcome to Off the Bench. I'm Sam from FPL Family.
I'm Andy, also known as Sonaldo from FF Scout.
Andy, game week 9 was a weekend of hat-tricks. We had Trossard, we had Haaland, we had Foden, all taking home the match ball this time around. We had amazing performances from the likes of Jarrod Bowen and Maddison. And the performances of Manchester City and Arsenal have left many managers in a bit of a quandary. Do you take them, buy them, invest in them, knowing that they blank in game week 12? Do you hope that they don't return in the next few weeks when you own them? It is a little bit difficult to manage right now in terms of FPL, but how did things go for you in game week 9?
Surprisingly, Sam, game week 9 went really well. You know, prior to the game week, just on paper, it seemed like the fixtures were going to be very tough, but we came out with 3 hat-tricks, which is crazy, 2 hat-tricks in one game. A lot of hurt managers in terms of non-Haaland captainers, as well as very happy managers and Haaland captainers. So very interesting that you mentioned the blank in game week 12, because navigating the next 3 game weeks is going to be very difficult moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I had a big decision to make over the international break as to whether I was going to play my wild card or not. And eventually I settled on a strategy of rolling through and holding that until game week 13. And in part, that was to do with the Manchester City and the Arsenal assets. I was looking at 2 derbies for them, thinking those are actually normally games, even though difficult on paper, where there can be a lot of goals. And they're games where I often really want to invest in players from those matches because there's that extra drive, passion, determination that comes out of them. So going into that week, I had a lot of players kind of playing in the derbies. And it could have gone one of 2 ways. But I think what we're seeing right now is that it's become quite important to have Arsenal and City players in your team. And when you don't, it can hurt. So I had the unfortunate position of finishing on 99 points this week, which is never great, is it? Like, as an FPL manager, that 100-point club is something that we all strive for. And for about 15 minutes, not even that, 10 minutes, I was in a 100-point club until James Maddison's yellow card in the Monday night football. And I was like, oh, James, you're going to leave me on 99. Bit of a disaster. But, you know, that 99 points, it's made so much difference. And we were talking on the FPL pod last week about the changes that can be made to your overall rank in terms of just a few points here and there. So my overall rank, because of James Maddison, mostly went up by 1.3 million places last week. And that's an obscene amount of places to rise. So, you know, you just have that moment of, if something like that goes well, if you can bring in a differential. Did you have Maddison?
I did have Maddison. I think you make some good points, Sam, because the thing I want to stress is that rank is somewhat irrelevant still. Because, for example, the difference between a 1 million finish right now and a 2 million finish is probably just 1 or 2 halls away. So I know a lot of managers might be upset. They might be thinking their rank is not good, but it's super bunched up. The points are cramped. So you just, you know, have to take it 1 week at a time and keep tugging along.
Yeah, for sure. I totally agree with you. And I think normally it's about game week 9, game week 10 that I really start to look at my overall rank. But this season, it does feel different. It does feel like everything is still much, much closer together. And it feels like, you know, the change between getting a goal out of one of your players and just getting an assist for somebody else can mean a massive difference in terms of the position you are in the overall rankings right now. So just focus in on the points and how many points you've got, because I think that will give you a lot of confidence. You know, now to get inside the top million for me is just 4 points away. And suddenly that feels much more sustainable and much easier task than trying to get 200K off of my rank or whatever it is that's left. So, you know, it's short change at the moment in terms of the number of points you need to make massive, massive progress. I think let's talk about Man City and Arsenal, really. Let's start there because they are the big talking points. Have you still got Arsenal players in your team? What are you doing with them right now?
I have Martinelli in my team. As many managers dropped Jesus out of their teams in game week 8 wildcard, mostly, and game week 9 wildcard, mostly because of the blank coming up in game week 12. Those that might not be aware, Man City and Arsenal blank in game week 12. So it's a big dilemma, right? Because we have game week 10 and 11 coming up, followed by a blank for those two teams. Yet, we saw from this weekend, the best 2 teams in the league, possibly, right now, are Man City and Arsenal. So are we overlooking these amazing assets just for the sake of game week 12? You know, do we have to hop on someone like a Foden who has Southampton this week? It is a question that is in my mind and something I'm deliberating this week as well.
It's definitely tough, isn't it? Because when you look ahead to game week 12, you do think, right, I really should start preparing my team. I should make sure that I'm going to be able to get 11 players out. I should make sure that the 11 players that I'm going to be able to get out are good ones, because there's some other premiums from the other teams that have really nice fixtures in game week 12. But then at the same time, you risk not having the points returns in game weeks 10 and 11 that you want, because you don't want to bring these players in. And I wonder, I mean, I think there's a few different strategies that can work right now around Manchester City and Arsenal. So obviously there's the strategy that a lot of game week 8 and game week 9 wildcarders were deploying, and that's to start removing them from their team, risking going without the points, knowing that then they'll try and bring them back in come game week 13. And that can work, but what we're seeing is that that can also hurt your rank. So not owning the likes of Jesus, Martinelli, not owning the likes of Foden or KDB or Haaland is going to take a bit of a brave FPL manager right now. Or if you haven't played your wild card like me, you kind of go for the strategy that's dead-ending your team. And by that, you know, taking out Manchester City and Arsenal players now. That was my original plan. But it's really difficult right now to start looking at who I could take out. So this week they're going to stay. Maybe ahead of game week 11 and 12, that's when I'll start removing them. And I think for me, it's quite an easy decision as to which of the players from Manchester City and Arsenal that I'll remove. More on that in a minute. And then the other strategy, I guess, is that for a lot of managers, you still have the free hit chip left. So if you do want to fill your teams right now with Arsenal, with Manchester City, then there's no reason why the free hit in game week 12 couldn't be a good strategy, because you're going to then have these players come straight back in for game week 13 to 16 when the fixtures are so nice. I mean, is that something that you would think about doing? Because obviously you've already wildcarded and you want these players in your team, I'm imagining.
Yeah, it's actually a great strategy that you mentioned. So, I mean, there's a couple of things, right? First of all, by the time game week 13 rolls around, we want to be, maybe tripled up, doubled up on the Arsenal and Man City assets, as well as Liverpool assets, although they did play a bad game. So with that in mind, you're right. You have to start building up towards game week 13. However, if you have more than three, Arsenal and Man City assets, then you're going to struggle to field 11 players, essentially. So the maximum you can have in game week 12 is three combined. So I think it's too late. I think it's too late to use the strategy of, I'm going to get Foden this week, I'm going to get KDB, I'm going to get, you know, Jesus this week, whoever else it may be, because you only have two games and then you have to remove it. So if you look in sort of the big picture, it's not just bringing in an extra City asset. You're bringing in the City asset with possibly two transfers to take him out and then take him back in. So I think that you stick to your wildcard plan. You realize that you're not going to be able to get them for the next two, three game weeks, which is fine. You can make your points elsewhere. But I don't like the idea of dead ending till game week 12 and then using a free hit, because we're going to get massive doubles and massive blanks coming after the World Cup, Sam. So I do think that saving the free hit will be a much better option moving forward. In the end, the guys with the wild card and wild card in game week 13 are the ones sitting in pole position, because now you have fun and you can sort of really attack the next three fixtures.
And it's interesting because right now I'm sitting on the double Manchester City defence and Haaland. So I've got Cancelo and I've got Edison in my goal. And that makes my life in some ways easier. Now, obviously, for the game against Southampton in game week 10, I'm going to want to keep Cancelo and Edison because I think a clean sheet looks likely there. But after that, I'm happy to sell those two. And then that puts me in a nice place for game week 13 going into that with my wild card, where I can invest two more attacking Manchester City players. And at the moment, what I think we've learned across game week 9 and perhaps in the few weeks that were preceding game week 9 as well, back in game weeks 8 and 7, that these premium defenders that we've all loved in the past, it's kind of big at the back strategy, just hasn't been working. And it was the same in game week 9. So we've got the players like Trent, like Reece James, like Cancelo, who you're investing a lot of money in, and the clean sheets just aren't coming, and nor are the attacking returns either. So there does feel like there's a movement at the moment, taking the money out of the defence and investing it further forward in the pitch, particularly when you look around that kind of 8 million bracket. I mean, this week, the 8 million midfielders did a sterling job, right? So we had the likes of James Maddison hauling. We had Jarrod Bowen also hauling, you know, even points from the likes of Luis Diaz. So there does feel like there's a movement coming at the moment and a wave of change in terms of the way we invest in the defence. And I think game week 9 was an exact example of why maybe the cheaper defensive options are a better investment right now.
Yeah, it's very interesting. This is one of the reasons why FPL is so, you know, so charming, because remember at the start of the season, Sam, Big at the Back was a widely known popular strategy within the community. And there was good reason for it. The top teams had good fixtures. You wanted to double up on the City defense. You had guys like Robertson, who was an absolute FPL machine last season. But now he's, you know, not performing. Double Man City defense wasn't performing. Game week 8 comes, everyone's talking about, oh, we have to go 3-4-3. We have to invest in the strikers. And now 2-3 of the most popular strikers are injured. You know, there's question marks with Tony. And so in the end, the 8 million price point midfielders, as you mentioned, did really well. But that does not mean they'll continue to do well. So it basically means you have to be able to adapt to the situation. And I think for me, the strategy would be to really focus on where you want to be in game week 13 and sort of make sure your, you know, team and price points throughout the defense, midfield, and attack is well set up so that you can get those assets in game week 13. I think it's too difficult to really say, is Big at the Back the best strategy? Is three strikers the best strategy? Is the 8 million mids the best strategy? It just seems to be constantly shifting this year, which is a beautiful thing to see.
What are your thoughts on the defensive double ups? Because in the past, you know, this has been something that managers have really enjoyed, you know, owning the likes of Trent and Robertson together, having the likes of Diaz and Cancelo at Manchester City together. And this year there'd been a bit of a movement heading into game week 9 and on the game week 8 wildcards for the Pope Trippier double up at Newcastle. Now, this week, I mean, arguably, managers who had Trippier got lucky in that he went off before the goal was conceded. The other side of that argument, of course, is that had Trippier and Charles stayed on the pitch, maybe they wouldn't have conceded at all. And then you might have got the two clean sheets in for both of them. But I mean, I'm looking at the goalkeeper stats at the moment. Pope's the highest scoring goalkeeper in the game at the moment, followed by Saar, Henderson, and then Martinez at Aston Villa. And it's not until position 5 where we see Edison, who's the, you know, the highest premium goalkeeper. And then we go down again, it's Raya. So for me, it's a really interesting one, because I wouldn't look at any, I mean, I'm on the Manchester City defensive double up right now, but I'm thinking that's probably not the way to go. Not necessarily because I don't like the Manchester City defense, but we're looking at a situation where if we carry on like this in terms of the clean sheets we're going to get this season, we'll have the lowest Golden Glove score ever in terms of, you know, the places that the goalkeepers have kept clean sheets. So it's really interesting as to whether there's value right now in those places, because, you know, I'm looking across the way at, you know, other goalkeepers who have kept clean sheets. I mean, ridiculously, I had Ward on my bench in game week 9 and I played Edison, because there's that element of of premium, you know, premium bias, isn't there? I was kind of like, you know, even in the derby, I feel like I've got to play Edison over playing my budget second choice goalkeeper. Well, that wasn't the right thing to do in the grand scheme of the game week, but it could have been. These things can be different, and, you know, Ward hadn't exactly been keeping a lot of clean sheets going into game week 9. But I'm kind of wondering now whether we're better to spread the love a bit with the defence, go in with the cheaper, slightly cheaper options. You know, you can still have the likes of Trippier in that mid-price defender slot. But I also think that, you know, there's more value in there because of what it allows you to do across the rest of your team.
I think the thing that stands out to me, two things. First thing is that from just in isolation in terms of keepers, I don't think it's good to be fixated on trying to pick out the perfect keeper. And I'll tell you why, because I think that over the course of, let's say, 10 to 20 fixtures, the keeper's point spread is not so drastic, as in your keeper might be Pope, someone else's keeper might be, let's say, Ederson. And even if Ederson does way better than Pope, maybe it's going to be a maximum of 10 to 20 points different. So I wouldn't fixate so much on keepers. Instead, I'd focus on their value. So right now, 5.3 Pope is not performing to the value that we want, because with that money, if we went to someone like a Gaeta who's 4.5, as you mentioned, Sam, you can use that 0.8 elsewhere, which can be much more effective in terms of points value. So I do agree with you there. The second thing is that there's a famous term in FPL, fixtures breed form. And we saw this with kind of Ward, Madison, and Barnes this week. And their next two fixtures are golden as well. So, you know, historical data and looking back at the past few weeks is also good. But the reason I mentioned this is you have double city defense. By game week 13, I think double city defense is going to be a very valuable and very good strategy moving forward, because they're the best defense in the league, and they have four great fixtures from 13 to 16. So I don't think Big at the Back is dead. I just don't know who you would go for right now at this moment in time.
I think the difficulty with the Big at the Back strategy right now is that I'm looking longingly at the Manchester City midfielders. You know, this week you've got the likes of Bernardo, you've got the likes of Grealish, who I thought was phenomenal in game week 9. You've got Foden, you've got KDB. And I'm looking at those guys thinking, I would really like to be invested in more heavily than just Haaland in that Manchester City attack, because they are scoring goals for fun right now. And I think you're right. I think the clean sheets will come back for them. But the question is, are they going to come back enough to make it worth having them over these kind of midfielders that look, if they continue to play like they did in game week 9, look like the way to go? Because, and I think that's going to make my decision. And there's going to come a point where I'm going to look at Cancelo and I'm going to look at Edison and I'm going to think, goodness, I wish I still had you both in my team, of that I'm sure. But the move towards the City attack and to invest fully, it feels like the upside is so much greater in investing in them. And I think that's, for me, why I'm starting to lean away from the Big at the Back strategy. I think if we saw some form from Trent, I'd hop back on, because I'm not seeing the same amount of players from the Liverpool attack that I'd like to fully invest in. So if we started to see the Liverpool defence pick up and more consistency from them, I think I'd be more willing to hop back there than I would to use one of the precious Man City spots. I mean, you could have six, couldn't you, right now? You could happily fill your team with six Man City players, but of course you can't. So the choices mean that the defenders kind of slip down the priority list, I think.
Yeah, I think a couple of weeks ago, maybe it was off the bench pod that I was listening to, you mentioned with Harry, Sam, about hopping off Trent. And even I thought, you know, I don't think this is the time, but look, you know, look now, it's hopping off Trent is probably the right thing to do. 7.5 million for Trent, or whatever his price is very, very expensive. And he is not performing to that level and to that valuation. So with the next two fixtures being really difficult as well, I do agree with you, until we see some team, you know, form in terms of defense, Liverpool defense might be a team to stay away from.
Mm. And I guess the thing is, it's going to be about priorities, right, going into game week 10, because a lot of us have got these premium defenders still, and we might be thinking about moving them on. But as you already said earlier, we've also potentially got some injury issues coming in from game week 9. There were so many injuries, it felt like. You know, we had the likes of Kyle Walker picking up an injury and going off for Manchester City. We obviously had Mitrovic, who would have frustrated a lot of managers, who kind of went in on him in the last couple of game weeks, particularly on wildcard, showing signs of injury. There was Janssen at Brentford as well. We had Cornet, Klein, Pedro Neto picking up an injury for Wolves as well. So many injuries across game week 9. It might force FPL managers' hands to kind of stay with their premium defenders a little bit longer while they deal with the other issues that they have at the pitch. And if you have got Mitrovic, I mean, I still don't own Mitrovic. So for me, it's one problem I don't have to think about, but you do. What are you going to do with him?
I actually own Mitrovic as well as Isak. So a big problem for me. I do have two free transfers, which is going to prove very beneficial. It's a tough one. It's a tough one because, you know, there aren't exactly screaming options, if you know what I mean. Maybe you could go to Tony. I know Tony's a very popular one. But if you look at how Tony's been performing over the last 9 game weeks, he's had, I think, 4 games where, you know, it's like a 1 or 2 pointer. He's had that 17-point haul. And then the rest of the games, it was okay. Maybe an 8 or 9 pointer. So decent output, but it's also very unpredictable. And what happens when you bring in a guy like Tony is you have to stick with him for the rest of the, you know, 7 or 8 fixtures till the World Cup, because it's really hard to move him around at his price point of 7 million, because you can't really upgrade to an 8.5, 9 million striker, nor can you do much with the funds elsewhere. So I think Mitrovic owners have a decision to make this week. We'll see how this injury, you know, seriousness comes out to be. But one of the options for me personally is to just downgrade him to a bench fodder and then use the 3 point something million elsewhere and really, you know, emphasize upgrading the midfield, because I think the midfield is where a lot of options and gems are hidden right now.
Yeah, it's an interesting strategy, isn't it? Because if you do that, you have to be sure that you're covered for game week 12. Because if you go heavy on Arsenal and Man City and then have an option up top that's not playing at all, then you put yourself in a greater problem going into game week 12. But I do think it can be an option. I mean, I keep looking at Ollie Watkins and thinking maybe he's an option. He's just that little bit more expensive than Mitrovic. But the fixtures are nice for Aston Villa. And I know that we're not seeing consistency from them yet. And they weren't exactly setting the world on fire in game week 9. But Ollie Watkins' underlying stats in that game weren't bad. He was top 4 XG underachievers across that game. So he should have returned, just didn't. And maybe that's in part because, you know, Leeds were down to 10 men with Sinisterra getting sent off. And it is difficult to play against 10 men. 10 men do tend to kind of close down and try to just restrict the play that the opposition has. But I do wonder whether there's some scope there. I mean, I'm looking at Watkins' fixtures going forward, and up next they've got Forest, who we've just seen have 4 put past them by Leicester. So there's no reason to think that Aston Villa can't get something out of that game. But it's maybe an option. The thing for me, I guess, is that with Mitrovic, we're going to just have to wait. It's going to be another wait until right at the end of the game week when we have the press conferences to see what's happening with him. And maybe this is a bit of a hang up from the ice that we saw on his ankle while he was away on international duty. Is going to be a wait and see, because if he can play in the next few fixtures, then I think you want to keep him, don't you? Because it's West Ham up next, then it's Bournemouth, then it's Villa. So scoping those matches for goals for Mitrovic, but you need to be sure that he's going to start if you're going to have him in your team.
Yeah, Mitrovic was a no-brainer on the wild card, even though he hasn't performed in game week 8 or 9. So we hope that he's okay. If he's okay, I definitely think he's a hold. I know earlier I said that you could, you know, downgrade Mitrovic to a bench fodder and sort of use the funds elsewhere. But by game week 13, we're going to want Jesus back. And so yeah. Jesus at, I think, around 8 million right now is very expensive. So maybe, as you mentioned, having a Ollie Watkins, who I think is a good shout as well, or someone at that price point to really attack the next 3 and then move on to Jesus in game week 13 could be another strategy in play.
Yeah, I mean, Jesus is a player that I've held with the intention that I would sell him this week. That was my full plan. Hold him for the North London derby, because I was actually expecting Arsenal to score goals in that game, even with my Spurs hat firmly on. I was thinking, you know, Jesus will probably get something from that one. But then ahead of Liverpool, I was thinking maybe that's the moment to sell, because then, you know, we've got the Liverpool game and then the blank coming up in 12. But now, looking at the way that Liverpool defended in game week 9, I want to hold Jesus for that one and then can keep him for the game against Leeds that follows, knowing then that he's either got to move to my bench or I take him out and wildcard him straight back in again for game week 13. And because he's in at 8 million now, he's taken a couple of price drops and he's back to his original start point, it's easy to do that in and out movement on a wild card and not have to worry about value and kind of and that kind of thing. But I think the London Derby was a really interesting game to watch, because Arsenal were by far the better team in that one. They dominated the game. But Spurs were a bit unlucky. There were moments where the ball through, it just didn't quite work. And I know that, you know, I'm Harry Kane's biggest fan, as we all know, but you're Ronaldo, your son's biggest fan. What are you making of him right now? Because it's difficult, isn't it? In the game against Leicester, he comes on, he bangs a hat trick. We were all kind of like, yes, Son's back. He goes away on international break. He plays brilliantly for South Korea, scores a goal, comes back into the derby. Was it more to do with the way that Arsenal dealt with him, or was it more to do with him just not looking quite himself again?
I will say this. He did come from the international break, had a great international break, as you mentioned, but he looked really, really tired. It's not easy travel. I think it's about 10, 11 hours from London to Seoul. And then, you know, 2 full 90-minute games, you know, straight back, first game of the week. So I think he looked tired. He does have a Champions League tonight, so we'll see how that goes. But I am very worried. I think that for his price point, he's not proving his valuation. I did catch the haul in game week 8, which was fantastic. But, you know, you look at guys like Foden, you know, Bowen, you know, Zaha, you can get 2 or 3 of them in place of Son. And the premium to go for besides Haaland right now is KDB. So I'm also betting against KDB every single week with Son. So I am very worried every week. However, I am now very bullish that I need to stick with him for game week 10 and 11, 2 great fixtures. Yeah. Hopefully 10 proves to be a good turning point for Spurs. And then maybe I'll consider the crazy captaincy over Haaland in game week 11 for Son. But essentially, Sam, as a Spurs fan, you know that a 3-4-3 is not working. Conte is, quite stubborn when it comes to tactical changes and player changes. And we really want Son to thrive in a 3-5-2 where he has that space behind. And the Perisic and Son combination down the left is not working right now. So it's not just FPL. It's just in terms of football as well. We just don't know how Spurs are going to do every week. It's a guessing game. And I'd rather have players from a team like Man City where we just know they're going to do well every week.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting from a Spurs perspective, isn't it? Because Son is very much led by the formation that Conte plays. When Perisic is on the pitch, he doesn't seem to get in the same positions. They kind of get in each other's way a little bit going forward. And it means that Son finds himself in positions where he's not kind of used to being. And in part, I think, this is the way our team is. This is our best team when Perisic is playing in that position in the wingback role. So Son's going to have to find a way and get used to playing in these kind of slightly different positions and also get used to playing alongside Richarlison, because that's very different to playing alongside Kulusevski. And having that front four, they just kind of have to learn to work together and be able to swap in and out with kind of relative ease, like we see at teams like Manchester City when Pep brings the changes. But I think what we don't see at Spurs is any negative impact of these changes for Harry Kane. He seems to be able to return come what may, but it does seem to be having a bit of a confidence effect on Son, because in that game against Leicester, he was back playing two up top with Kane and then he bangs a hat trick. So it's fascinating and it's interesting. I do agree with you. I thought he looked tired. And I think the international break, there was a lot of travelling for both Richarlison and Son. And then the injury to Kulusevski going into that one meant that the three of them were going to have to start, particularly with Lucas Moura still injured. So no real attacking threat on the bench either for Spurs. So it kind of had to be those three. I think you have to hold. Yeah. You have to hold him for the next couple of fixtures. But then going into game week 12, Spurs have got Manchester United. Now, Son has a fantastic record against Manchester United. We all remember the amazing performance of a couple of seasons ago against them at Old Trafford. So I think you can hold him through that one, knowing then you've got an easy route to KDB if that's where you want to go in game week 13. But I think what you just said about the mid-price midfielders is really, really valid right now. So going into this game week 9, I sold Jarrod Bowen and I was really worried about it because obviously he absolutely hauled. And all right, it was against a Wolves side who have got so many injuries going into that game and then picked up a load more injuries during the game. So they've got real problems. But Jarrod Bowen looked back. He looked like kind of the swagger was back about him and he looked confident. And so did West Ham, actually. They purred a little bit in that game. And like you said before, kind of that fixtures breeds form thing is true, right? Because it was a nice fixture for them that they took advantage of. And now going into the next few weeks, Bowen again looks like a really nice pick. You had him performing well. You had Madison, you had Foden, you had Luis Diaz as well, although to a lesser extent, we didn't have the same level of haul from them. And then you've got players like Zaha, who's going to be a key target for FPL managers. Didn't return anything in game week 9, but was a little bit unlucky. It might come to a point where you're looking at Son with his 2 points every week, thinking, well, I could have almost two of these guys for the cost of having Son.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also the fact that I'm not confident captaining in Son at all for any of these game weeks. So, what's the point of having that much money in one player if there's no standout premium, maybe besides KDB, to be having a 12 point something in Son in my team? However, with that being said, at any moment in time, Salah, KDB, Son, Kane, these premium assets can, find a patch of form and go crazy. And so you always want to have a route back to a second or third premium. And as you mentioned multiple times, Sam, FPL moves fast. Sometimes we want three premiums, sometimes we want none. So I think it's very important to be adaptable moving forward.
Mm. And we did also see three red cards during game week 9, right? So with Chalobah, you won't be too worried about him from an FPL perspective because not very highly owned. But players like Sinisterra and Royale from Spurs to a certain degree, both now going to be blanking. If you've got them, they then become easy sales, of course. But it's not so easy to move sideways for Spurs defenders. I mean, he's knowing who's going to take his spot. Will we see Perisic move to the other side, which might benefit Son? And with then Sessegnon playing on the other side, that could work. Or will we see Matt Doherty come in and get some minutes? Because he's been dropping in price galore over the course of this season, so it could be a nice cheap option. Or, you know, do you move off of the Spurs defence altogether because not exactly performing? And Sinisterra, I mean, I don't know how you feel about Leeds, but for me, I was kind of interested in them in that game. I thought they might go out and attack Aston Villa, but the red card for Sinisterra means he's an easy sell. There are other players in that Leeds team that you could go to. Of course, Rodrigo is back now. The fixtures look kind of nice for the next few weeks. He was fantastic, wasn't he, ahead of that shoulder injury. But how long do we kind of give Leeds to kind of get back into their rhythm? Because I feel like they've lost a bit of their flow since Rodrigo's been absent.
Yeah, I'll address the both questions. The first thing is, I think Doherty comes straight into the team. I know that Perisic started on the right, but when you look at that game, particularly when Perisic started on the right, by the way, he only started one game on the right. It's because Richarlison started on the left and not Son. One of the key attacking patterns of play that Spurs have been doing is using Perisic's ability to cross. And usually when you have Perisic on the left, that means you have Richarlison on the right, who is also great on the ball and can, you know, have get header goals here and there. So that's the reason why he started on the left. And, you know, moving forward, I do think it's Sessegnon versus Perisic on the left and Doherty as well as Royale competing for the right spot. So I'm very interested to see how that develops. If Doherty comes into play at 4.6, 4.7, just incredible value and someone I want to get to. In terms of Leeds, I still think Leeds is worth investing in. I think Leeds is at the price point where you can keep them till the rest of you know, the season and rest of the next 8 game weeks till the World Cup. I love the Rodrigo shout. I think people are sleeping on him because prior to his shoulder injury, he was probably the best player at Leeds.
Arguably, he was one of the best players in the league at that point.
In the league, yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm happy you mentioned that because he was supposed to be sort of a secret punt that I've been thinking about this week. I'm very interested in Rodrigo. I know he's in trading now, and I just think Leeds is such an exciting team and such an exciting attacking team in FPL to own, even though Bielsa has left. So Rodrigo is someone that I'm keeping my eyes on as well.
What about Trossard? Because, you know, I said going into game week 9, he does really well at Anfield. He'd never blanked there. I wasn't quite expecting a hat-trick, I must be honest, but he did do really, really well in game week 9. And I thought Brighton were really interesting. I was really intrigued to see what kind of Brighton side we would get because, you know, you read about the new manager and it's all kind of this attacking flair football. And that's not something that I necessarily associate with Potter's Brighton. They are... And they have always been a really, really solid defensive unit. And they've always been, from an FPL perspective, a team that we want to invest in defensively. But going into game week 9, I was like, I want to watch. I want to see how game week 9 pans out. It's a difficult fixture against Liverpool, followed in game week 10 with a difficult fixture against Spurs, before some nicer fixtures after that. But I wanted to see how it panned out because right now, I'm not invested in Brighton at all, with the exception of Joe Veltman, who kind of sits on my bench most weeks. But I was watching to see how they play because the Brighton players are cheap. They're cheap options going forward, right? So you can invest in the likes of Gross, in the likes of Trossard with relative ease. And you could even maybe take a cheeky punt on the likes of Danny Welbeck in that third forward slot if you kind of want to save a bit of money and you do have an injured Mitrovic or similar that you need to kind of deal with. And I was hoping that we might see some continuity from Brighton in terms of the defensive stuff, but then this added additional element of attacking flair to their game. And for me, that's exactly what we got. We got a game against Liverpool where actually, even though they conceded 3 goals, Brighton looked defensively fine. They continued to look okay. You expect to kind of concede goals against Liverpool. But attacking wise, they looked absolutely fantastic. They looked like a team that had worked really hard over the international break with the ones that had stayed behind. They knew exactly what their jobs were and where to be. And I think sometimes as FPL managers, we are put off. We see fixtures against Liverpool and Spurs and we think we shouldn't invest in these teams because they won't score goals against them. But right now, Liverpool aren't keeping clean sheets and nor are Spurs. So I'm looking at Trossard, even ahead of a game against my own team, thinking, you could be a really nice replacement for some of my cheaper midfield options who aren't really performing as well at the moment.
So, Sam, I do agree with you. I think that it might sound knee-jerky to go for someone like Trossard, but Trossard is the talisman for that team. Gross as well as McAllister are cheaper on the in the Brighton side, but I do think that Trossard will continue to tick along. They have Tottenham, Man City, as well as Chelsea in the next 6 or 7 game weeks. With that being said, you know, they just performed against Liverpool. They've been performing all season long. Even with the Potter change, they're going to become a more attacking team. Sometimes it's not always about the coach and you know, what Potter has done for this team. It's also about the players, and these group of players are really, really good. So why not invest in a top five, top six, team in the league right now? So I do like the Brighton shouts moving forward.
All right, so let's talk about our transfers then, because obviously, you know, we've both got some issues. You've potentially got some forward line issues. Whilst I don't have any injuries to deal with, I do have positions on my pitch where I'm kind of looking and thinking that could do with a bit of a shake-up. What are your transfer thoughts heading into game week 10?
I'm really stuck. I have 2 free transfers as well as 2 major injuries in Mitrovic and Isak. So I'm not really sure what I'm going to do. If it was just one striker with an injury, I was going to downgrade him as a bench fodder and use the funds elsewhere to upgrade the likes of Andreas. However, now with these 2 injuries, I think what I'll do is look into buying a premium striker. This is sort of outside the box thinking, but I'm looking at guys like Nunes and Jota as well, because I just trust in Liverpool still, regardless of how they've done so far. But I still have to think about what else I want, because I wildcarded in game week 8 and my team is really well set up moving forward. I don't have popular players such as Bowen, but maybe I can forego Bowen. But by the time I get to game week 13, I want to make sure I have as much City and Arsenal assets.
Interesting, isn't it? Because I'm looking at my team thinking, well, it doesn't look that bad. I mean, the only player that I currently don't have in my squad that I'm really nervous about not having going into this next few weeks is Wilfred Zaha. Like, he's one that I'm kind of thinking I probably should invest in. But it's knowing how to go there. So the only real route I have to going to Zaha easily and cleanly without taking a points hit, which I'm definitely don't want to do because my team doesn't look like it needs it for this week, is to sell Luis Diaz. Now, in part, I don't mind that because I think that Arsenal will, well, I think if Arsenal play like they did in the North London Derby and Liverpool play like they did against Brighton, that Liverpool will really struggle to beat Arsenal in game week 10. I think if Liverpool turn up and play in the way that we know they can do, if they kind of perform, and I guess the Champions League this week will give us an insight into maybe where Liverpool are. But I think, you know, Arsenal for me are the team that look more likely to win that game and score more goals. So Luis Diaz is maybe one that I could move for Zaha, knowing then that when I come to want to reinvest in Liverpool, maybe a couple of weeks down the line, because don't forget, they've also got to play Manchester City in this little run of fixtures that they've got, that I can do that on my wild card and I have a bit of a clean choice. Because it's interesting that you talk about those forwards. They are players that I'm definitely interested in, but my front line right now reads Haaland, Kane, Jesus, and I'm not prepared to sell any of them right now because all performing, all giving me nice rank rises every week. So I don't know, I think for me right now, Luis Diaz to Zaha feels like the transfer I'll probably make, but even then there is a part of me that wonders whether rolling the transfer into game week 10, knowing then I'll have 2 for game week 11, might be a better option. And the captaincy, I'm struggling to look anywhere other than giving it to Haaland against Southampton. I mean, is there even a feasible alternative this week?
No, I would not overthink it. It's just astronomical figures and one of a kind. And when a player is on cloud 9 with this type of confidence, you just don't want to bet against it. Some of his goals are, you know, just ridiculous, Sam. Some of these goals, they look easy, but most strikers can't even get to the ball the way he springs to lunge, for example, KDB's assist this weekend. So Haaland captain, and do not overthink this.
Yeah, I mean, there were some Salah captains, weren't there, in game week 9? And going into game week 9, that looked like a feasible strategy. I mean, it's something I remember saying I would have done. Had I had Salah in my team this week, I think I would have done it. I'd have looked at the 2 fixtures and gone, Salah with a great record against Brighton versus Haaland in the Manchester Derby. Whilst I back on Haaland to return, Salah should have more potential ceiling, you know, to go and smash it. But actually what we learned this weekend is it's very difficult. I mean, there are other options. I think you could captain. I mean, Kane against Brighton, he's got a decent record against them. You know, Jesus with the form that he's in against a Liverpool defence that can't defend right now also feels like it could be an option. But I think, you know, the hurt that it causes you in terms of the points totals and your mini league ranks, if you haven't captained Haaland, it's just not worth it for me. And Haaland, I can't see me not captaining him, apart from in game week 12, of course, when I can't and I'm going to have to pick somebody else. But otherwise, I just think he's going to be my captain probably for most of the year now.
Yep, I absolutely agree. You know, it depends how you play FPL. Sometimes maybe you just want to have fun and pick the players you want to pick. But a lot of us competitive managers in the community, we have to remember this is a game against other managers. It's not a game of, you know, who do I pick has the most points. Yes, that's true, but it's all relative. And when the majority of the community is picking Haaland for good reason, there's really no reason to go against it. Instead, I would advise to sort of look elsewhere and try to gain points elsewhere instead of focusing on going for the big shot, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Thanks so much for listening, guys. Game week 9 was a high-scoring FPL week. Hopefully, game week 10 will bring more of the same. Don't forget the FPL pod will be back on Thursday, looking ahead to game week 10. They'll be discussing injuries, key fixtures, as well as key players to target in the coming weeks. Thanks so much.
Bye, guys.